Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 9-8 podcast, the home of progressive and underground music here in Australia. My name is Alex Hogg, and this week is a special episode of the podcast. I have had a chance to sit down with the main man of Australian progressive metal band, Toe Hider, Mike Mills. Enjoy. How are you, Mike?
I'm great, mate. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So I just wanted to ask you, where did music start for you?
I think music started for me via my dad's cassette collection that he would play in the car when we'd go on long drives. We used to listen to a lot of country music and a lot of 50s and 60s rock. I remember losing my mind when I first heard Buddy Holly. So I was quite young, maybe. Yeah, I guess it will. I started playing guitar when I was about six, so this must have been before that. So, yeah, as early as three or four, I guess. Yeah.
So who are your influences growing up and who influences you now?
So the influences when I started, again, was probably a lot of that stuff that I listened to via my dad. A lot of country music, a lot of sort of balladeers, you know, Kris Kristofferson and Slim Dusty, actually. Listened to a lot of that sort of that old school kind of simple country stuff, which I still love and still it's a huge inspiration to me lyrically. Maybe not so much musically, a little bit musically, but some of those early country albums have superb lyrics. So that was always the motivation, is to kind of combine those storytelling kind of lyrics with rock and metal stuff. And I suppose on the metal side of things, I got into a lot of the old 70s prog stuff like Yes and Jethro Tull, but also, you know, Sabbath and then obviously Rush, and that whole 70s prog thing was pretty wild. So I think, you know, that's all that stuff still influences me. And a lot of the modern prog stuff is phenomenal as well. The sort of, you know, the sort of post-carnival, especially in the Aussie scene, you know, all that stuff as well. Yeah. Nice. It's hard to find stuff that I don't like.
You're known for injecting a lot of humour into your songs and your live performances. Does that come from the sort of country storytelling you're talking about, or is there other specific comedic influences that you have, especially with stuff like You and I Both Lose? I mean, that just cracks me up every time.
I think that was kind of a response to a band that I was in prior to Toe Hider. I was in a band called Template, and we used to write collectively. We used to write the songs together, and it was like we used to joke around a lot. You know, we'd have like a lot of bands do, we'd have a lot of in jokes, you know, like stuff that would only be funny to us, and then we'd go out and we'd try to write all of this serious kind of Mars Volta-y musy kind of music. And I was always like, you know, music should be a reflection, to me at least, music should be a reflection of your personality, you know. So it didn't make sense that we're all, you know, when we were just hanging out, we'd just be joking and trying to make each other laugh and stuff. But then when we'd make music together, it always had to be very serious. So once that band folded, I just had loads of ideas that were on that kind of humorous side. But I suppose, yeah, I guess stuff like, you know, like Weird Al Yankovic. I mean, that's more like parody stuff, but musically that stuff is phenomenal. Like, I think he's very very underrated as a musician and as a composer and a songwriter. But obviously, you know, the Zappa stuff as well has always got that sort of element of humour. And even Queen, a lot of the Queen stuff's pretty funny as well, which was a huge influence on Toe Hider.
Well, I can definitely tell the Queen influence with your vocals as well, just singing all the high stuff. I mean, where does that come from? All the high singing. Have you had like traditional vocal training?
No, I've never had singing lessons. I didn't study music beyond, like, I had a few classical guitar lessons when I was in year 11 and 12. Actually, here in WA, I did the last 2 years of high school here. it came from I don't really know. I think I remember listening to like Deep Purple, Ian Gillan, and you know, all that sort of traditional metal stuff like Iron Maiden and Halloween and all those kind of, you know, Judas Priest and all that kind of stuff, and just being really really blown away with the high screaming stuff. It just sounded so exciting, and I just used to sing along to all these albums in my room. And I was in a cover band with my brother at the time when we were teenagers, just playing around pubs and stuff in Western Australia, and we'd do all like, you know, like that kind of old like classic rock kind of stuff. And yeah, and I guess it just kind of developed from there.
So how I heard about Toehide was actually through my girlfriend at the time, who's now actually my fiance. She heard you were going to be playing at the 10th anniversary Birds Rope Collective show. Yeah, and told me that I needed to be there. Egged on by you as well, I think, in that same comment thread back then. Is that how you see your fan base has grown, sort of organically through sort of friends of friends telling you about the music?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely that word of mouth thing. I'm not very good at... I'm not a very good salesman in that way. Like, I'm quite, you know, quite content just staying at home and in the studio and just writing. And for me, that's the exciting part. Most exciting part, I suppose. But it's always been a struggle for me to, you know, go out and say, "Hey, check this out! I'm really good," or whatever. You know, like, because obviously there are a lot of people who are natural at that, and it's always blows me away. You know, to be able to be like a shameless self promoter, but not in an arrogant way, is a really fine art, and it's something I'm still trying to learn. Just slowly trying to come out of my shell and just try to. You know, yeah. Try to tell people, be a bit more vocal about, you know, getting in people's faces. But it's hard. It's not in my makeup, you know, so it's kind of a bit of a mission.
Yeah, fair enough. I know the feeling. Where does the song start for you? You play almost all of the instruments on your records, I'm led to believe. Pretty much all of them?
Yeah.
So does it start with a guitar riff, or like do you start with the lyrics, or where does your song usually start for you when you're writing?
It definitely depends. I mean, like I feel like every song that I write is almost like a different process. So sometimes it begins with the song title, actually. Sometimes it begins with the story. Sometimes a drum groove or a guitar riff, or yeah, maybe it's all over the place. There's no real one system that I have.
That's really interesting. You'll hear other bands that sort of, they'll sort of jam, or it'll start from one sort of like one, it'll start with a guitar or start with a groove or a melody or whatever. But it's really interesting that it sort of comes from, it sort of, there's no sort of one set process for you.
No, actually, lately I've been dreaming a lot of songs. Like, I wake up and I have a song in my head, and it's like the first response is obviously, well, is that already a song? Or, and then sometimes that, you know, the more you wake up, you realize that the song idea just sucks. But occasionally there's some good stuff that comes out of it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about sort of a song idea kind of sucking. Do you ever have a process where you've written something and you think, "No, I've sort of done that before"? Does that happen when you're coming up with new music?
Like, in terms of, feel like I'm just repeating myself again?
Yeah.
The biggest challenge on that subject, I think, is like releasing an album and then people will respond to a certain song. Like, I did an album a couple of years ago, and there was a song on there called "Whatever Makes You Feel Superior," and it just seemed like people gravitated to that song more than any other. So there's always like that, oh, I got to write a song, I got to kind of write something along those lines, because that's what people. It's like this weird trap where, you know. It's a bit of a pointless endeavor, because I won't write something like that again, because if I did, it would just sound, you know, I've already done, I don't know, it's this weird war in my brain that happens. So I try to just forget about it and not really think about it, and just sort of let whatever happen.
You know, I've heard other bands describe it in a way where they write the music that they want to write, and then hope that other people will like that, yeah. Like that same music.
Yeah. Well, there's like, I feel like Like, I just want to try all of it. Like, I've definitely written stuff with the sole intent of trying to get it liked. Like, I remember there was a – I won't name names, obviously, but there was a radio station here in Australia that was in the news for a little bit because they were criticized for more or less sticking to a formula of a particular style of songs that they would play on their radio station, this popular radio station. And they would deny it. And they never played any Toe Harder music despite us trying to push it and stuff. And so I wrote a song that sort of adhered to the formula that they were accused of using. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they played it. They loved it and they played it. So it's just kind of to prove a point to myself. And most Toe Harder fans don't like that song, but it was by design. It wasn't really for them. It was just to sort of prove a little point to myself, I guess. Yeah. So I'm very, you know, I just want to try everything. You know, I want to write songs, very personal songs. I want to write, like, you know, funny songs and sort of harsh songs and weird songs and like, you know, yes, it's really poppy stuff to kind of appeal to a lot of people, and also really heavy stuff. I don't know. I just love experimenting with all that kind of thing. I'm fascinated by it all.
Yeah, fair enough. How did your collaboration with, now I'm probably going to stuff his name up, so I apologise in hand, Arjun Lucassen, come about?
Yeah.
From what I read, he reached out to you to collaborate on a record. Do you know how he heard about you?
Yeah, I think that, well, I believe that two things happened. There was a cover of a Jethro Tull song that I did on YouTube that he commented on. And then simultaneously, I got a message from him saying that this was separate. So that the comment was on YouTube, obviously, and I got an email from him saying, actually, no, it was a Facebook message. He said, I love your stuff, you know, like, would you be interested in singing on an Aerion album? And then we were talking online for a while. And then he was like, oh, so you were the guy that did that Jethro Tull cover. He didn't realize it was the same person for a while. I think the story goes, like, he read a review of the first Toe Harder album in a Dutch magazine, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's how he found out about me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it just sort of snowballed from there. I love working with that guy. He's a, you know, I think the word genius is kind of thrown around a lot, but he is definitely... Yeah, I think he's definitely a genius. The stuff that he comes up with is just out of this world. It's wild.
Yeah, absolutely. I was having a chat with a friend of mine, actually, just before we came on here about how that the Last Dream Theater record, The Astonishing, probably should have been one of his, like, if he had done it,
right,
it could have possibly been quite a bit better than it was.
Yeah, right. I like The Astonishing. I think it's a great album. One thing that Arjun does very well, I think, is writes for the singer really well. He's got this amazing skill where he knows how to complement a singer's voice. And I definitely think that with James LeBrie, with the stuff that he's sung, that he's sung on the Aerion stuff, is among my favourite work of his, actually, of James's. And I think that's, he owes a lot of that to Arjun. Yeah.
Yeah, well, personally, I think James LeBrie did an amazing job with The Astonishing, because he kind of got handed almost impossible task trying to sort of do the different voices for the different characters on the record.
Yeah, he's my favourite. He's my favourite element of that album, for sure.
Yeah. Of all the things you've accomplished in music, what's something you haven't done that you want to do?
I think I would love to see some of my music performed by an orchestra. I think a lot of writers have that aspiration, and, you know, I've never gone to any lengths to figure out how I can make that happen, but I just think it would be nice to write for an orchestra and hear it performed. But yeah, that's a whole other world to me. But yeah, maybe one day.
need to get in touch with the people who do all the ones with the Plovdiv Symphony Orchestra in Bulgaria.
Yeah, yeah.
With Devon and Anathema. I think Opeth's done one as well, from memory, yeah. I wanted to discuss the plan for your new record. Where did the idea coming from? Sort of having the, you know, a collection of songs and then having the fans pick what's going on, the new album? Is that the...
Yeah, so the idea is we're doing this, I say we, this is myself and Andrew Saltmarsh, who does all of the artwork. We're releasing music via Patreon, which is basically how it works is that people pay a certain amount of money, like anywhere from, you know, a dollar through to like $80 a month. Essentially, I'm writing songs, releasing them just to the subscribers, and the plan is to write a bunch of songs for them to cherry pick in a way, like get them to vote on which songs they think would be the best for a public release. As for where the idea came from, I'm not really sure. It just seemed like a fun little experiment. Maybe it's a response to one of the criticisms I get is the albums might sound sort of disjointed. Because it stylistically jumps around quite a bit. Maybe it's a response to that. Maybe I can get the fans to pick the songs for me because they might have a bit more of a concept of what would work better in an album context. So I generally don't think about writing an album. I just write songs and then try to piece them together somewhat. So that, I guess that's where the idea came from.
You could end up in a situation where you always end up with like two albums, sort of like what Opeth did with Damnation and Deliverance, where you got like all the really heavy stuff on one record and then the lighter, more sort of acoustic, even the acoustic driven stuff on a second record.
Yeah.
That'd be quite interesting.
Cool. Yeah. Part of the songs that I'm writing now is I'm doing a concept album. There's a part of me that was thinking about releasing a double album where it was the first disc was a bunch of songs and the second disc was the concept, but we'll see. We'll sort of keep plowing ahead and keep writing songs and see what happens at the end of it. I think it's pretty fun.
How long have you known Andrew Saltmarsh, and how long have you guys been working together?
We've known each other since the Toe Hider thing started. Maybe a little bit before that, there was a website called ozprog.com, which I think started out as more, it's almost like a petition to try to get Dream Theater to tour Australia. And then it just sort of turned into a website where there was a forum and, you know, and there was album reviews and news and interviews and things like that. I think that's where I met Salty. He reached out to me. I was a member on the forum. I think that's how we met.
Because he was heavily involved with Jordan's forum. He was like doing moderating for Jordan's forum for the longest time. Yeah. So a couple of quick fire questions. What was the last record you listened to?
A new Ocean Collective album, I think. Okay. On the plane on the way over here. Yeah.
That's a quick becoming a favorite of mine. Yes. Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Huge.
What would be your album of 2018?
An album by a band called Ostura.
Okay.
Which I sang on, obviously. But if I didn't sing on it, I would probably pick that one. The album's called The Room, and it's insane symphonic prog stuff, which is... Okay. Yeah, it's really heavy and it's wild. Just check it out.
Definitely put a link out there for people to listen to that one. And last question, tell us something we don't know about you.
I'm colorblind. Playing a game on my phone on the way over here, and it was like a puzzle game, and there were these knights, and the puzzle could only be solved if I could figure out because it was color coded, and I just couldn't do it.
Red, green, colorblind, or completely, or
blue and purple look the same to me as well.
Yeah, okay.
Green and brown. It's all a bit of a mess. Yeah.
All right, well, that about wraps it up. Thank you very much for joining us on the 9/8 podcast.
No problem at all.
Well, that was Mike Mills of Toe Hider joining us on the 9-8 podcast. You can catch him today in Melbourne, tomorrow in Sydney, and on Monday in Brisbane. Dave and I will be at the Sydney Progfest show. We'll see you there.
The 9-8 interview.